now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good Saturday morning, mid to late October. Oh gosh, that weather forecast is beautiful. And we're going to talk some gardening today because it's that time of year to think about the spring, what to do over the winter. And we have a returner to our lineup today. It is Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Guess what I did last few days ago? Ooh. I went to the Shaw Nature Reserve.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
I went hiking. It was like a middle of the week, maybe a Monday or Wednesday or something like that. And there was basically no one there, which was great because I just was by myself. I took the trail that goes by the river and did the whole loop.
How wonderful.
Probably about an hour, hour and 15 maybe. But it was cool.
Yeah. And that's a really beautiful place to visit, that trail by the river, especially in the spring, because that's where all of our bluebells are blooming. So if you go back in maybe late March, April, and you walk that trail again, you'll see just a field of beautiful blue flowers. And
wow.
It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, I went, I took the path off of the trail down to the river itself.
Yes.
It was very peaceful.
Yeah.
And very quiet. I was out, it takes from, I live in Soulard, so it took, 35 minutes to get out there. It's about right. Not a bad trip, straight on 44. It's right off the exit, too. And then after I worked off all the calories of hiking, I went and had a beer in Pacific.
Excellent. That's exactly what to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I like to hike. All right. So our number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. There's also an 800 number. You have to dial the 1. It's 1-800-925-1120, as in 1120 a.m. But the local number, 314-436-7900. We are going to take your questions about gardening and trees and plants and flowers, whatever's on your mind this mid-October. Call and we'll have some answers for you, hopefully, from Aaron. Aaron, what's going on at the Shaw Nature Reserve in general?
Well, it is... We are approaching fire season, so there is that's always exciting. Once our hours change to our winter hours, we will be closed on Mondays, and that does allow us to engage in some basic maintenance, tree maintenance, trail maintenance, some prescribed fires without interrupting people's visits. So that's kind of what we're doing right now is preparing for our winter hours and a lot of winter work. In the garden, we are in some of the areas that are a little more of the high-touch garden. We're cutting back, we're cleaning out leaves, and we're putting some of our gardens to bed. And just getting ready for that cozy winter ahead.
Well, can you explain a little bit about the fire, the prescribed fires?
Mm-hmm.
What exactly do you do? What does it accomplish?
Well, excuse me. So prescribed fire is a method that's been used for thousands of years. It was a method of management that a lot of Native peoples engaged in. And so one of the ways that we use it is to clear out some of the excessive what we call duff or vegetation.
Duff.
Duff.
Again, every show there's one word.
Duff,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, this one today it's duff.
Just imagine debris that's on a forest floor or debris that's on, that drops down to the ground in between plants on a prairie. That's kind of one of the names for it, is that debris is called duff. And so what it does is it builds up over time and it does inhibit some plants' growth. And so when you run fire through it, it clears out this duff or this excess vegetation. And in a prairie, it's beneficial for certain grasses and flowers to continue growing. In a woodland, it's really important because it clears out some of the potential for the higher temperature fires that we hear about that happen out west. Those can occur here in Missouri too, but part of prescribed fire through a woodland is to decrease some of the fuel load that is on the forest floor. It helps to clear out that excess vegetation, but also it makes invasive plants more visible. So if we know that something is invasive and a fire runs through that, then it's easier for us to go in then and identify those invasive plants and remove them in a manner that makes sense at that time of the year.
How do you control the fire?
Oh, that is a great question. So prescribed burning is a science, and in a way it's an art as well. So people who engage in prescribed fire, they have training. There's usually a burn boss. That's one of my favorite job titles ever. If I
burn
could go
boss,
back,
yeah.
I would love to be a burn boss.
That'd be cool.
But a burn boss really is, they're the boss on site. They make sure that everybody's in their proper place, that the fires are burning in a way that is controllable, that all of the emergency, any kind of emergency personnel is on site. All of the fire departments have been called, county officials have been called, everybody's been notified that there's going to be a prescribed fire. And so there may be a team of 10 plus people out there watching fire lines, out there with rakes, out there with what's called a damper. And some people may have be on a drip line, which is where the fires are actually started. And there's a method to it. You have to pay attention to the wind speed, the wind direction, the humidity, the temperature. I mean, a lot goes into deciding whether or not a prescribed fire will go ahead or not. And, you know, it may be the day before a prescribed fire is set to go ahead, but if the morning of that prescribed fire, you wake up and the weather has changed, the forecast has changed, you may have to just wait for another day.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're going to take a trip on the water across Lake Michigan or something.
Yes,
you can't go out there if the waves are 5 feet high or whatever. You don't want to be driving your boat across the lake.
Correct.
So you have to make a call, adjust. But I'm wondering how does drought impact those decisions? Because we definitely are back in some form of drought conditions. Even though over the summer we had kind of gotten out of it, now we're back in it. So how does that affect the decisions?
So I, professionally, I am not like, I don't engage in prescribed fire all the time.
And
you're
not a burn boss?
I am not a burn boss.
Okay.
But so I'm sure that there's, it's a much more complicated answer than what I'm going to give. But drought, of course, is drying out vegetation, and there it does increase the danger that a fire could burn a little hotter than what you want it to burn. However, you do want that vegetation to be relatively dry, because the more moisture there is in vegetation, the more smoke you get. So there's like this perfect balance. You know, you don't want it too dry, but you don't want it too wet either. So I know dryness can affect the temperature of a burn, but you don't want it to be too moist either.
Yeah, and certainly wildfires are very dangerous, and we've seen what's happened in Maui and in California with the drought conditions, and those fires, I mean, these are totally different things, prescribed fires versus wildfires,
right,
I'm saying.
Right.
But fire in general, you know, can rage out of control for a long time, for days, weeks, even months in some situations. So I think it's fascinating to learn how to control fire and what it can do for the vegetation and for the reserve, which I just visited, and that place is huge.
Yes,
I mean, it's huge. It's beautiful. It's very serene, and you can definitely be by yourself out there if you want to. I'm sure on some weekends it's probably more crowded, but if you go out there during the week, you could usually get a little bit of space to yourself. So I really enjoyed it, and I've been asking some interesting questions here of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, but we need to hear your questions. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline. This is the service for you on Saturday mornings, and we are going to get to those phone calls after a short break. Stay tuned to us on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Diverse opinions, mutual respect. That's the politics you'll find at KMOX. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined this week by Aaron Goss, who is with the Shaw Nature Reserve. We are answering your questions at 314-436-7900. So if you're stumped about something, you're curious about something that's going on in your garden, your lawn, Aaron has probably the answer. She's been pretty, I would say she's like 97.5% so far on the show with getting a good answer. Now, the next topic I'd like someone else to introduce.
Fall, people love fall.
It's my favorite season. It's not a competition. My favorite season that I'm voting for in America's Next Top Season is fall. People that love fall, they go crazy for the foliage. They're like, oh, the foliage! Let's drive by the foliage! It's so beautiful the way the leaves die. Pretty right before they fall to their death. We think it's beautiful. It's the leaves hospice. It also helps that the leaves can't talk. If they could talk, they'd be like, ah! Give me chlorophyll! Why are these people driving by and smiling at me? You monsters! They're insensitive to the leaves' tragedy. They die, they fall to the ground, we just rake them up. Kids, you want to jump on this pile of dead leaves? No? All right, I'll just light them on fire.
Jim Gaffigan on fall and foliage. Aaron, I know you wanted to talk about this subject, so I set you up here.
How in the world could I ever top that? Never. Oh, yes. So leaves, yes. People love viewing those beautiful leaves. And, you know, it seems like we're a little behind. We have been super dry, so the vibrancy may not be quite there. But we do have some leaves that are turning. Most definitely I've seen viburnums and dogwoods have started turning, the sumacs. So if you're driving down 44 or you're driving, especially on the interstates, and you see along the interstates some kind of large shrubs that are vibrant red, those are sumacs. Those always have an amazing fall color. So the last that I heard, we are still maybe a week or two away from peak out at the nature reserve.
And is that mainly because of the drought? The fact that we haven't had as much rain?
It has a lot to do with it, yes.
Now, you were also telling me off air about raking the leaves, and maybe people shouldn't do that?
Well, raking the leaves is perfectly fine. There is a movement out there to engage in leaving the leaves, and that's kind of a broad encouragement to leave the leaves on your property. So maybe you rake them out of the turf, but if you can move them to another area of your yard and leave them, that actually is incredibly beneficial to a lot of our insects. We have insects that overwinter, particularly in oak trees, including insects like our Luna moth, which is a giant green, like neon green moth. It's beautiful. We also have the Polyphemus moth, which is another huge moth. And both of those moths, they're chrysalises, they overwinter in oak leaves. Hmm. And quite a few other insects do that as well. And so when you rake those leaves up, you burn them or you mulch them, like you shred them, or you send them off to the city or in lawn bags, then you're removing those insects off your property and potentially impacting the songbird population on your property. So if you have a lot of songbirds, if you like feeding the birds, then I highly encourage you to leave some leaves around your yard, because that's where some of these insects are overwintering, that then their caterpillars will feed songbirds in the spring.
Well, it's a cycle.
Yes, it's very much a cycle.
When you say huge moths, how big are we talking here?
Some of them are very large. So,
kind of like Mothman.
Not quite man size, but yeah, yeah. Maybe stick it on a, you could turn it into a Mothman by sticking on a popsicle stick.
Really?
But they're, you know, sometimes their wingspans are 3 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches. There's some that are even larger than that. I mean, some of these moths can be huge. And they're not scary moths. They're like beautiful. They're vivid. They have vivid colors. They have long tails. They're like the moths that you see that you want to capture dry and put on the wall.
Mm.
I'm not encouraging you to do that.
Yeah.
But just they're absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't seen those. The one you mentioned about the neon green, I guess.
Yeah, they're not commonly seen. And especially, again, when we're removing all of the leaf litter from our yards, then we're taking all those moths away. So we are seeing less of those moths. Also, certain insecticides affect these moths and butterflies. So we aren't seeing quite as many around St. Louis as we, of course, would like to see.
Our number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve here to answer your specific questions. Aaron, we're getting towards winter. What do people need to think about in terms of watering?
You know, a lot of people don't actually think about watering in winter, but it's actually really important. If you imagine if you went all throughout winter without water, you know, your body would be in big trouble. Same with plants. So especially when we have a dry fall and we have a dry winter, and then we have excessive cold early on, then a lot of times plants can go into shock. They can die because they don't have, they need that moisture in order to circulate their food throughout their bodies, along with needing water for growth and development. And so if we don't have precipitation, whether that's in the form of snow or rain, it's really great to get out there and give your, especially trees and shrubs, a drink at least once a week if we're not getting water.
Once a week for how long?
So I usually encourage people to, if you're using some sort of irrigation, you can put it on a timer, maybe an hour or two. It's better to water longer at less frequently than it is to water more frequently for a shorter period of time. So if you're watering individual plants, I usually will count to about 20 or 30 seconds per plant and then move on. You can also perform something called a finger test, where you stick your finger down into the soil and you try to go down at least an inch or two just to feel to see if there's any moisture. If there's no moisture an inch down, those plants definitely need some water. If it's 2 inches down, they may need a little bit of water. So you can use your finger to actually feel the moisture level. So again, the going thinking is most plants need about an inch of rain of natural precipitation a week. If we get that, great. If we don't, please consider watering your trees and shrubs, at least 30 seconds apiece, even more.
Yeah, the forecast right now is we're still not having a whole lot of rain. A passing shower on Tuesday, that's
right.
About it. Hopefully, I mean, we really do need some rain. So hopefully, if I have to, I'll go do a rain dance outside, but I'd rather not. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is here. She is here to answer your questions. So if you have one, go ahead and dial us up right now. The number is 314-436-7900. We'll start taking your calls after a short break on KMOX. You're tuned in to the Garden Hotline. It's been around for 3 decades, at your service, answering your questions about your garden, your lawn, anything you're curious about in terms of plants and flowers and trees and the environment. We have Aaron Goss here from the Shaw Nature Reserve, which is a beautiful spot out on 44, just west of Pacific. And I just went there recently, and so I was happy to enjoy it. I really had a good time over there and enjoying nature. So your questions are at 314-436-7900. I do have a piece of advice since we're getting close to Halloween. That piece of advice is if you take your significant other out into a pumpkin patch and promise them that they're going to see the great pumpkin and you don't deliver, look out.
I didn't get a chance to go out for tricks or treats, and it was all your fault. Also, what a fool I was. I could have had candy, apples, and gum, and cookies and money and all sorts of things.
See? See what happens if you don't deliver the great pumpkin?
Did she actually say I'll sue?
I thought she said, yeah, she did. I mean, she could have had all kinds of candy and money and things, and Linus did not deliver. So I'm just putting it out there. It is that season. You have to make sure that the great pumpkin shows up. We will talk a little bit about some holiday decorating, but let's get to the phones. We are going to start with Paul. You're up first on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, guys. Thanks for your service. And my question is about zoysia grass. I've been trying for 20-some-odd years to get zoysia in my yard. I've got a good portion of it covered, but the parts that I plugged and spread within the last 5 or 10 years that gets a fair amount of shade, unfortunately, it's being taken over by these little weeds, and I don't know what kind of weed it is. I'm going to try to kill them with Weed Be Gone product, but is there any other way to improve the spread of zoysia other than just plugs and patches and the like?
Yeah, so unfortunately, zoysia is a full sun turf grass. So if you have areas that are really shady, you're probably going to be struggling with zoysia in those areas. If you are open to maybe adding in a turf grass that will tolerate a little bit of shade, then that will help obviously fill in your turf, but it wouldn't give you that consistency of the zoysia look.
But, oh, that's great. What kind of grass seed are you talking about?
So there is actually a mix that was created for St. Louis. It's called George's Magic Mix. It's been around a really long time. That they do have a shade mix that has, I believe, like a rye. It has a type of fescue that's a little more shade tolerant.
Right.
But I would check with some of the local companies. I don't believe the bigger box stores will carry George's Magic Mix, but a place like St. Louis Compost or one of the local seed dealers or companies that sell mulch, a lot of them will carry George's Magic Mix. And just and you can also internet
search. Are you saying Georgia or George?
George,
like male name George.
Male name George, apostrophe S.
Oh.
So George's Magic Mix.
George's Magic Mix.
Yes.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
And I can have my lawn overseeded with I'm going to kill the weeds, but is this a good time of year to do that, or should I wait till spring?
No, it's a good time. Well, we are pushing the end of overseeding, so we do need some warmer temperatures sometimes for some of the seed to take, depending on what type of grass is in the mix. So there are certain grasses that will grow, turf grasses that will grow more, they will grow more in the cooler season. And then zoysia is a warm season grass, so it really only takes off once the temperatures are warmer. So you should still be able to overseed now, but I wouldn't wait too much longer because a lot of these grasses will need to grow a little bit and put on some root development before the temperatures tank.
Okay, one last question about zoysia.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm out here in my yard walking around, I notice that the parts of my yard where the zoysia isn't very sturdy is all shaded.
Yep.
So I remember as a child in North St. Louis, many neighbors had zoysia, and they used to burn it when it turned yellow in the fall, early winter. Mm-hmm. Is that recommended for zoysias still, or was that something somebody thought of? They were doing good, and maybe they weren't doing good.
You know, Paul, I do not know the answer to that question. It makes sense that people might burn zoysia because it's a warm season grass, but I don't know that that's very common anymore. You know,
well, St. Louis County law might prohibit it.
Yes, it might. It might. They don't exactly like people just setting fire to stuff.
Setting fires everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So unfortunately I can't give you a direct answer to that question. But I bet that if you're working with a turf company, they should be able to they'll know the local the rules, and kind of they'll be a little bit more updated on some of those practices.
Oh, wonderful. Hey, I got one last question. All these pin oak trees that are dying everywhere with some sort of fungus, is that something unique to St. Louis and the Missouri area? Is this happening all over the country?
It is. I believe that it's happening all over the country. So some of our oaks are being hit with something called oak wilt. There's a few other diseases that can affect oaks. I know that, so pin oaks are not the longest living oaks that we have. And so a lot of our pin oaks that are really big and kind of grander, they are reaching really the ends of their life. So some of these oaks are just declining. These pin oaks are declining because of their age. And some of them are declining because they are getting a disease. So it really depends on the age of the tree and then how it's been cared for.
Right. This one in my backyard is, I know we've been in this house 40 years and the house was 7 years old. I presume the original owner planted it when they moved in. So it's getting close to 50 years. And I think that's probably the lifespan of pin oaks.
Yeah. That sounds about right. I mean, I think they can live a little bit longer than that, but really that's the max.
Sure.
That's pushing the max of their life.
Well, thank you so much for your information today, and hopefully you get some more callers.
We do. We have them on the line. Thanks for calling in, Paul. We appreciate it. And George's Magic Mix. Do you know who George is?
I don't, but I would love to have met George.
Okay, let's go next to Greg. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I've overseeded and did everything. The yard looks fantastic. We did this about a month ago. I put down just some basic starter fertilizer at the time. And for I would imagine just one more fertilization application, when should I put that down and what kind of ratio, you know, as far as the nitrogen and phosphorus would you recommend?
Yes. Excuse me. So that's a little bit of a stumper for me, honestly, because turf grass is not my specialty, so I can't give you the proper ratio. So I apologize about that. But I can say that when you're fertilizing, kind of a rule of thumb is that you want to fertilize before the growth starts. So if you've overseeded and that the seeds are starting to germinate and it's looking really good, if you're going to fertilize, I'd fertilize earlier rather than later.
And yes, I've did the starter and even though it's an established yard, so that was 4 weeks ago. But
okay.
Then I'll put on either a winter or a fall fertilizer. I just wonder when should I do that? Different people say put two applications, but we'll probably just do one final and just want to know when would you suggest that. Should I wait till November or do it sometime in October?
I from what I understand about the way grass grows, I'd probably do it in October. But honestly, I'm not a turf expert, so I do apologize about that.
Maybe one of the callers will kind of add in then.
Yeah. And also, if you're working with a turf company, you can always ask them. And then there's a lot of really great information on the University of Missouri Extension's website.
Okay.
About turf grass and application rates and timing for fertilizing.
All right, perfect. I could check into that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Greg. We appreciate it. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, and the number is 314-436-7900. We'll continue with your questions for Aaron Goss of the Shaw Nature Reserve in just a moment.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Glad you could join us. We're answering your questions, or specifically Aaron Goss of the Shaw Nature Reserve is. The number is 314-436-7900. And up next is Dale. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Aaron. Hey, I want to pot some tulips for the spring, so I'm just wondering, is it better to use potting mix or potting soil or some other variation?
Yes, so a quick question there. Are you wanting the tulips to sprout in the container, or are you just kind of holding them until the spring?
No, to sprout in a container.
Okay. Then in that case, I would use just a standard potting soil. Make sure it has some good drainage. So some of those potting soils out there are going to have, a component that wants to keep the moisture content super high. Just remember that those tulips don't want to sit in moisture all the time. So go with a potting soil that will have good drainage and not hold too much moisture.
Okay. Do you look for that on a bag or?
Yes. Yes. So,
okay.
Excuse me. There should be something. Sometimes the potting soils will have a wetting agent listed and it'll call it out on the bag as like a positive. Just be wary of those. If you do end up with one that has one of those wetting agents or something that does retain moisture, it's probably going to be okay. I would just check the moisture level. Just check the moisture in the pot over the winter and make sure there's holes in the bottom of the pot.
All right. Sounds awesome. Thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome, Dale.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jerry. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Oh, okay. Hey, my yard in like June, July, August, I get this brown spot where the grass like goes dormant in that area. And then it's about a 12-foot circle. And then when the fall comes and it starts raining again, it goes away. And I don't know if that's a disease or what that is going on.
Yeah, so it's very possible you have some sort of a turf grass fungus. Sometimes also when the grubs are active in the soil underneath turf, sometimes they can affect turf as well. What I would do is if you have photos of those circles from that time period in June through August, if you have... go ahead.
I can get photos, yes.
So what I would do is send those photos to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Missouri Extension. You can also send those photos to the Missouri Botanical Garden, their plant doctor. Their email is plantinformation@mobot.org. They should be able to give you a better idea of what's going on with your turf because it could be several different things. It could be an infection, like a fungal infection. You also could have some insect activity under the soil.
Well, I've checked that. There's no grub or nothing like that. Okay. So.
Yeah, it's probably, okay. You probably do then have some sort of fungus. And again, in that case, if you can get that diagnosis of that fungus, of what type of fungus it is, then it should be easier to treat it.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you for your show.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
All right, Nancy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, I recently had a new sidewalk installed, and now the sidewalk butts up right against my azalea in the roots, so I'm probably going to have to move it over and bury the roots deeper. So when would it be a good time to do something like that?
Yeah, that's a great... Oh, go ahead.
Well, it's been in my landscaping for many years, okay. So I'm afraid that I'm going to kill it or damage it by digging it up now.
So that's I'm sorry that you're in this situation, especially with a more mature azalea. So you should be able to. Oh, well, actually, let me ask a question first. Do you know, is this azalea, is it an evergreen azalea, or does it drop its leaves in the wintertime?
No, I think it keeps the leaves on. Maybe some of them turn yellow, but it doesn't, you know, completely lose all the leaves.
Okay. So what I would do is maybe wait another month or two until the trees are all dormant, all of your other non-evergreen shrubs have gone dormant. So wait until, like, the end of November before the ground freezes. And or you could also... You could also do it now too, and then go ahead and transplant that azalea. And the key to transplanting a more mature shrub is going to be to make sure you get plenty of that root ball. So go out about a foot or even two, and that seems like a lot, but the objective is to get as much of that root ball as possible to try to keep the shrub from going into shock after it's transplanted. So take your shovel about a foot, foot and a half, up to 2 feet out from the base of that azalea, dig your hole and dig that azalea out, and then replant it where you want it. Make sure it's thoroughly watered after you transplant it. And then also make sure it gets some water once a week.
Oh, okay. So I do that now instead of waiting until spring then. That can be done now.
You can do it now in the fall, but you also can do it in the spring.
All right. Good question, Nancy. Thanks for calling into the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. We'll continue in the next hour answering your questions. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Stay tuned.
Now, at your service.
Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Our guest today is Aaron Goss. She's been on the show before. Very popular guest from the Shaw Nature Reserve, answering your questions on the Garden Hotline. And that number is 314-436-7900. Whatever you are puzzled about regarding the fall, heading into the winter, we'll try to get some answers for you. Aaron, what about events at the Shaw Nature Reserve this time of year? We talked about the foliage earlier. I know that's a popular thing for people probably to drive out there and see. What else is going on?
Yeah, so we actually offer quite a few classes out there through the Missouri Botanical Garden class system. And some of those classes range from guided hikes through the nature reserve to nature crafts to plant identification and looking for animals and like animal tracks and that sort of thing. We also have a yearly art show out at the Nature Reserve, and it's held on November the 2nd and November the 3rd. It's a Saturday and Sunday, and it's from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m., and that's actually at the Dana Brown Overnight Center, which is an area of the reserve, of the Nature Reserve, that actually is not usually open to the public. And there are several cabins on site. There's a bathroom. There's an assembly hall. And so there's all of these beautiful buildings where artisans bring their artwork, and then they're displayed, and people can look around and pick out a piece if they'd like, meet the artists. It's a really good time.
It sounds like a fun time. November 2nd and 3rd out at the Nature Reserve. You were talking about tracks, animal tracks.
Yes.
When I was out there a few days ago, I just heard all kinds of things rustling around, and I could never figure out what they were. I'm sure a lot of basic stuff like squirrels and birds and whatnot, but sometimes they would, this frightened me because I wasn't expecting them. All of a sudden, there's something jumping out of the bushes. All right, let's get back to the phones. Lori, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for having the show. I just have a question. I have a perennial garden in my front. I have some brown-eyed Susans, garden phlox, all this stuff. And I'm wondering when I should start trimming that down. Some people say let the frost get it and wait till the spring. Other people say start trimming stuff now because it's dying off. And I just didn't know what the advice is on that and on rose, like shrub roses and everything.
Yeah, so it's kind of up to, in a way, up to your preferences. So in a perennial garden, what we like to say out at the Nature Reserve is don't cut it back at all. Mainly because a lot of those seed heads, especially those black-eyed Susans and brown-eyed Susans, those will help feed birds over the fall and winter months. Things like coneflowers, those are really important sources of food for some of our songbirds. However, that is not everybody's aesthetic preference. You know, some people don't like the look of flowers or the browning out of plants over the wintertime. And so you can start cutting them back now. Really, a rule of thumb is you can cut the main stalks back to the basal foliage or the foliage that's right on top of the soil level, but don't remove the leaves that are at the soil level, because a lot of those leaves that are at the soil level will help protect the plant through the winter months. So if you want to start cutting them back, you know, you can start doing that now, or you can leave them up until, I usually cut back in late March and into April. So I wait a really, really long time. I wait until the spring to cut things back. And then there's a hybrid version where you can cut back the stems of your perennials to about 12 to 24 inches tall, and leave those stems up. And then what happens is that you are now leaving an option for insects to overwinter in those stems. And so it's really, again, up to what you are wanting in your garden. You can cut them back now. You can cut the seed heads off and leave some of the stems, or you can wait and leave them up through the winter months and cut them back in the spring. As for your roses, your rose pruning, I usually prune roses in usually February. I wait until the very, I kind of wait until they are dormant, and then I also wait until the buds on the branches start to swell a little bit, so I can see what parts of the rose have died back. But also, those buds will be a good indicator for where to prune in order to force a new branch from that older branch.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll see if my HOA allows me to let them go over the winter time.
Awesome, Lori. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for calling in, Lori. We appreciate the question. Up next, we're going to go to Ruby. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes. A couple of weeks ago, we went to the Bear Creek Seed Festival, and we heard guest speakers. And we are in Poplar Bluff, and down there the soil is really, really a challenge. And I have about probably 14 raised garden boxes, but on the perimeters of it, it's really ugly. So they had suggested to put cardboard down and contact tree trimmers to bring in the shavings from when they force their limbs through the grinder. Mm-hmm. And then keep adding that, and over a couple of years, that soil should be enhanced. What do you think of it?
Yeah, that's a great approach. So I like to call the cardboard method, like some people call it lasagna gardening. Some people just call it the cardboard method. But yeah, laying that cardboard down on top of what you'd like to kill and to enhance that soil, putting on some sort of mulch on top, whether that's chips from trees, or it could also be leaf mulch. Or leaf, sometimes it's called leaf compost, that will eventually break down and make that soil better. It will take quite a while for that soil to loosen. I assume that you probably have a lot of clay down in the Poplar Bluff area. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I want you to tell me what you mean by quite a while.
So it's going to take many years in order to build that soil profile. Yes. So you will see some results after maybe a year or two. You know, once that mulch starts to break down, you will see that you have a nice layer of of what looks like good soil underneath what mulch is left. But you want that soil profile to really build up. And so that takes a long time. And then it also needs to work its way down into the clay soil that you have. So it does take many years, but what you have described, that is the first, that's the first step to having better soil.
Okay, after that year, when you see some progress in there being a base that you put something, do you suggest, what would you suggest to put in there to make it just aesthetically more pleasing?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So one of the beauties about Missouri is that you have a lot of options. And so once you have all of the vegetation underneath that cardboard killed, so if you have grass or something underneath there, you can plant directly in. And what I would look for is I'm a native person, native plant person. So I'm going to advocate things like coneflowers and asters and butterfly milkweed. But if you can look for plants that have a taproot, and so that's a root that is a little, it's longer, it kind of goes deep into the soil. What that'll do is that will help break up the clay. It'll create pockets of air where moisture can get in, and it starts the process of really opening up that clay to more air penetration and water penetration. So that those tap roots in a heavy clay soil is really important. And then,
okay, then you've invited another question. are these perennials, or do I have to do this every year?
No. There are lots of perennials out there you can look for. So again, if you look for coneflowers, so like a purple coneflower, while that's not a taproot, it still is good for that soil. It's also very beautiful and pretty easy to grow. We have lots of asters, like aromatic aster. That's a drought-tolerant plant, and it blooms in the fall. You can also look for things like garden phlox. That's a very common sun-loving plant. It'll draw in butterflies. You can also look for... we've got goldenrods, if you're willing to take a chance on some yellow in your garden, and then black-eyed Susans. All of those are going to be good choices for you.
Oh, thank you for your help. I appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you,
Ruby, for calling in. It's 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline. Aaron is answering your questions today, and we will continue with the phone calls in just a moment on KMOX.
Local insights, breaking news. KMOX, the news station dedicated to St. Louis and the region. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
If you're wondering what that music is, it's Aaron's. Aaron came up with this suggestion, and I believe that it is Dead Man's Bones.
That is correct.
And
yes.
That Ryan Gosling is in the band.
He's the lead singer. It's a very creepy album.
Yeah, well, it's the creepy time of year, so that's right. It's perfect. If you have a question for Aaron, 314-436-7900 is the number. Now, earlier in the program, Aaron, you gave out some information about a lawn seed for the shade in St. Louis called George's Magic Mix.
Correct.
Well, our next caller, Denny, says he knows who George is.
Hallelujah.
So let's find out, Denny.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I do know who George is. His name was George Robinson. And George, unfortunately for Aaron, has passed away. But I knew George most all his life. We were great friends. He was an amateur agronomist who really specialized in grass. He loved grass. And for his good fortune, his brother, Herky, 25 or 30 years ago, was president of the Kansas City Royals baseball team. Huh. And field supervisor, the gentleman that oversaw the field for Kansas City was a gentleman named George Toma, T-O-M-A. And George Toma at the time was considered the baseball guru for baseball fields. And many baseball teams went to him for advice in their field. Anyway, George Robinson and George Toma hooked up, which is why you get the name George's Magic Mix, and created and collaborated what is the Magic Mix seed. There are several varieties of it, and it's been around for about 25 years, and it's very useful. I use it. I know you can't get it everywhere, but I know you can get it at the Schnars hardware stores in Ladue and Webster, and I'm sure there are other locations too.
Wow, that is great information, Denny. I appreciate you calling in and let us know the story behind George's Magic Mix.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Did you want to add anything, Aaron?
Oh, that's awesome. I've never heard George's story, and so it's thank you so much, Denny, for calling in and sharing.
All right, the number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline, and Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is answering your questions this morning. We are in the middle of October. We're getting quickly toward winter, and I'm curious about holiday decorating in the garden. I know this has got to be something people think about for months on end, because I go around town and I see these beautiful displays. And so do you guys have classes on this, or you know, what can you tell us about using nature to create holiday decorations?
Yeah, so there are definitely classes out there. Missouri Botanical Garden offers classes, as well as Shaw Nature Reserve. And then also sometimes through the community colleges and the University Extension, you can take classes on wreath creations. But then as far as like your own yard, there's a surprising wealth of objects that you can find throughout your landscape that you can use to make wreaths and arrangements. So one of the things that I always look for is color in stems. So stem colors. We have some perennials that where their stems turn a color this time of year. So blue stars are one of those perennials, and they kind of develop a purplish red color to their stem. Also, red twig dogwoods, they start really, really, their vibrancy starts coming forth as the season, if it starts getting cooler. We have persimmons. Persimmons people eat, but you can also clip branches and use those in decorations. We have our viburnums are vivid in their color, so those can be clipped and put into arrangements. And, of course, our evergreens. We have junipers, pines, cedars, camassiferous spruces. All of those can be, those boughs can be clipped. Boxwoods, all of those can be clipped and used in wreath creations and different arrangements. And then seed heads. Don't forget seed heads. Those, while they're a lot of times forgotten about in arrangements, but they really can lend a deeper layer to your arrangements.
What exactly are seed heads?
So seed heads are exactly what they sound like. So that is what, those are the structures that hold the actual seeds of a plant. So we're talking, so like on a coneflower, what's left over after the petals drop, that would be the seed head. And you can collect those and make them, put them in arrangements. You can let the birds take all of the seeds off, and you're left with this really cool little cone structure. A lot of our asters and blazing stars, once they are picked clean of the seeds, then there's a structure left over that actually has, that's very aesthetically pleasing. Sometimes you get, especially on blazing stars, you get these clusters of what look like flowers, but there's no petals, there's no seeds. It's just the remaining structure from where the flowers and the seeds attached to the plant itself.
All right. Some good tips there, Aaron. Let's get back to the phones. Jake has a question. Jake, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Morning.
Morning.
Appreciate the info all these years. Wishing Mike the best. And last week, you guys were speaking about what you call root suckers.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who called in when they were speaking, they were talking about a tree they had live, and they had them coming off of roots. I had a crabapple tree cut down, no stump grinding, and I have root suckers everywhere. We used to call them root shooters. But anyway, if I thin out the herd, so to speak, or whatever, will any of those ever become a viable replacement tree for it?
Honestly, probably not. So it depends on what type of crabapple you had. So a lot of trees are grafted. So if for those of you listeners who aren't familiar with grafted, I imagine most of you are. But the grafted tree is where you take a rootstock that is different from, it's related to the desirable parts of a tree, but you take a separate rootstock from the top portion, you graft them together, you sew them together, they end up growing together, and then it maybe makes that tree a little hardier. Maybe it's more drought tolerant, or it doesn't get as many diseases. But what happens is that sometimes that root wants to also grow as its own plant. And so that's when you sometimes get root suckers. So that's if you have a grafted tree, but there are also some trees that also want to be, instead of a single stem, they want to be multiple stems. So you end up getting multiple root suckers. So if you have if you know that your crabapple has not been grafted, it sometimes is possible to take a root sucker and it turns into a new tree. However, a lot of times root suckers are weaker than if it was a main branch or a main stem. So sometimes those root suckers can be called water sprouts, and the way that they form, they just are not as strong as the original branch. So,
well, I know the tree was 30 years old. It did produce crab apples. It had beautiful pink foliage and kind of a darkish purple red mix of leaves.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Yeah, I don't know exactly if that was grafted. I mean, you could try it. You could clip all of those root suckers except for one and just let it go and see what happens. But if it starts leafing out and those leaves are not purple like the original parent plant, then it most likely was a grafted tree, and it's never going to be that purple-leaved tree that you loved in the beginning.
So there's no way to cut like a healthy clipping, so to speak, and try to get it to start producing roots?
Not if it's grafted. So that's why I'm saying if you leave one.
Yeah, I understood all that.
Okay. Yeah, I just, without knowing whether it's a grafted tree or not, I can't tell you if it's going to be a viable tree that looks like what you originally had with those purple leaves.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jake, for calling into the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. Aaron from the Shaw Nature Reserve here answering your questions. We've got just a couple more segments, so if you have a question, go ahead and jump in line. 314-436-7900. Back on the Garden Hotline in just a moment.
Bernie Nicholas gets the final word during sports on a Sunday morning, this Sunday at 11:45 on KMOX.
I'm all dressed up with nowhere to go. Walking with a dead man over my shoulder. I'm all dressed up with nowhere to go. Walking with a dead man over my shoulder.
That's right. It is that time of year to play Dead Man's Party. Oingo Boingo.
Amen to that.
I love that song.
Me too. So,
Danny Elfman is brilliant. Of course, he was the front man for Oingo Boingo, but most people know him because of his movie compositions.
Yes.
He did Tim Burton's movies, the music for those, a lot of other movies you've seen. He is a prominent composer in Hollywood. And so anyway, but it does go back to his early days. He started with Oingo Boingo. And so I always love to hear that song. And it's October. We're getting toward Halloween. Those are the kinds of songs you play on the Garden Hotline, even. Now, I want to ask about something. The number, by the way, is 314-436-7900. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is here to answer your questions. I'm sure you have something you would like to ask before the show runs out, and you don't have that many minutes left. So go ahead and hop on. 314-436-7900. Aaron, I did want to ask about one topic that's kind of controversial. Sweet gumballs.
Oh, yes.
Now, these things, I'm sure, I believe that there is a probably a pro, con, good, bad thing about these, because I mean, when you walk in your yard and you've got a sweet gum tree and there's sweet gum balls everywhere, I mean, it's kind of like walking on cacti, you know. Make sure you wear shoes.
Yes, absolutely, make sure you wear shoes. We usually call them ankle rollers, ankle breakers. But yes, sweet gum balls are notoriously polarizing. It's like some people don't really care, some people really hate them. One positive thing about sweet gum balls is that they do actually make a decent mulch. So you can put them in your, you can use them in your beds as a alternative form of mulch, and they take a very long time to break down, but they do eventually break down. You may end up with some seedlings in your garden beds, but you can actually use them as mulch. And they do make tools to pick up those sweet gum balls that are pretty fun to use. And you can send your kids out there to pick up those sweet gum balls, and you don't have to lift a finger.
Okay. But they're kind of prickly.
They are, but you know, the kids wear their shoes. Tools that you use to pick them up, they look like a giant, a smaller bingo, like a bingo basket, and they're designed where it just this globe kind of rolls across the sweet gum balls, and it scoops them up, and once the ball is full, then you can empty it into a bag. And so kids can, sometimes it's fun because it's like a little toy that they're picking up all these sweet gum balls with.
All right, you're selling it. Okay, Kevin is up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Hi,
Kevin.
Aaron.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hi, Aaron. How you doing? Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
How you doing? Hey, I have a question. I would like to start some mimosa trees on my property. So what's the best way to go about that? Seeds, or purchasing, small trees, or how do I go about it? I know they grow wild all down along Highway 30, but I don't have any around me, and I'd like to get some on my property.
All right. Well, unfortunately, in this situation, I have to advocate that you don't plant mimosas. And the reason is that they are one of our invasive species. So I need to say that for the fact that I work at the Shaw Nature Reserve, and I work with the Missouri Department of Conservation. It is a species of concern in terms of its invasiveness. It's one of the reasons why you see it all over the place. With that said, okay, if you really want that mimosa, mimosas will grow by seed very easily. They do have a hard seed coat, so a lot of times you have to nick that seed. You have to, and this is true for any legume or any member of the pea family, you have to nick the seed coat, soak it in water overnight, and then plant it, and it'll grow. But I do, okay. I do beg you not to plant them.
All right.
Okay. Do you need a male and a female tree to make it?
You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. There are a lot of trees out there that do need a male and a female, but I don't think that mimosas are one of them. However, I'm not 100% sure about that. If you do a quick internet search, the Missouri Department of Conservation, or even the Plant Finder, Missouri Botanical Gardens Plant Finder, it should tell you whether or not you need a male or a female.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks for calling in, Kevin. Up next for Aaron, we have Marcia. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I have a question. You had mentioned the Blazing Star native plant earlier. If I collect those seed heads, can I plant those seeds like just anywhere? Do they have to be stratified? How would I go about that?
So if you plant those seeds now, through, say, maybe early December, you don't need to stratify them. The winter freeze-thaw cycle will stratify those seeds naturally. However, okay. if you want to plant them in the spring or if you want to plant them in a pot, then they really like to have about a three-month cold, moist stratification. And what you can do is just use sand, maybe a wetting agent like peat moss or something that's a little more environmentally friendly. If you mix those two together, add a little bit of water, put it in a plastic bag, put the seed in there, just make sure that the substrate that's in the bag itself is just on the moist side, no standing water. Add the seed and then put it in the refrigerator for about 3 months, and then it should be ready to germinate.
Okay, great. And would that be kind of the same for butterfly weed?
Yes, that's very similar. A lot of people have good success outdoor stratifying butterfly weed. So if you you can use something called the milk jug method, where you take a milk jug, you cut it in half, you fill the one half with soil, and then you add your seeds, stick it outside over the winter months. Then you put the top of the milk jug back on it, you kind of seal it, and then take the cap off so there's a little airflow. Stick that outside. It behaves a little bit like a greenhouse, but those seeds still have freeze-thaw cycle of over winter in order to help them germinate.
Okay, yes, I've seen that done before. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Marcia.
Thank you for calling into the Garden Hotline for Aaron from the Shaw Nature Reserve. We do have a few more calls to get to. We're going to do that after a short break, so stay tuned.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve answering your questions this morning. Let's get back to the phones. Mark, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, just aerated and put some seed down, a mix of fescue. Question is, I know I'm supposed to keep it damp. If I don't originally water it, can I wait till we get some maybe slightly damper weather and then start to water it? And will I still get germination that way? It's so dry, I figure it's not going to germinate until it gets water on it. Is that correct?
That's partially correct. Those seeds are getting some water because of our dew and some of the frost that we have in the morning. So that's the only concern I would have about you not watering, especially if they've already germinated, then definitely water. Definitely. However, if they've not been watered, again, those seeds are getting some moisture and from morning dew and the frost in the mornings on the turf. So just watch, and if you notice that the seed is germinating with just that little moisture that we have in the mornings, then definitely start watering. You probably can wait, but again, the longer you wait, especially if the seed is exposed to wind, they will dry. The seed itself will dry out even more, and it may take a little longer for them to germinate. So my advice would be just to go ahead and water. But if you want to hold off, just watch that seed and make sure it's not germinating on its own.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Mark. Joanne, you're up next for Aaron. Go ahead, Joanne.
Hi, good morning. I have a question. We have some common ground behind your house. It's actually like old wood, or not old wood. It's the trees are very large, been there for a while. It's just a beautiful piece of property. We can see it from our deck and the back of the house. And I want to put wildflowers out there, native wildflowers. How do I go about that?
So if it's common ground, first, are you in an HOA? Is that the common ground?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I could ask, of course.
Yeah, just make sure that your neighbors don't mind that you plant back there and the HOA is aware. Just good neighborly relations. But after that, you can, there are several routes to success for planting wildflowers back there. You can acquire a seed mix from one of the local nurseries, so like Missouri Wildflower Flowers Nursery, they're a big popular one. Hamilton Native Outpost is another distributor of native plant seed. And you can go out there and seed and spread the seed over the winter months. So again, now is a good time through really December so that those seeds have all of winter to go through that freeze-thaw cycle to prepare themselves for germination in the spring.
I don't need to prepare the ground, I just put the seed down.
So you do need to make sure that there's not too much leaf litter in that woodland area. So if it has a lot of leaf litter, then you might need to create little pockets where you can just put the seed in.
Got it. And actually, there are patches where there is no leaf litter.
And then you can just
that would work.
Throw that seed down. The other thing you can do is buy live plants and install them. The seed is it's a great time of year to put seed down.
Okay. I like the idea of putting the seed down. Do I need to turn over or scratch the soil any or just drop the seed?
Drop the seed, and then sometimes it is helpful to have, you need seed to soil contact. So you can use a rake to kind of rake it a little bit. You can, sometimes people use their feet, although that sometimes will spread the seed out around other places. But it is, you do need that seed to soil contact.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Joanne. Up next, we go to Tom. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes. Good morning. I have an old oak tree that's on its last legs, and I was wondering how I could plant some acorns to try to get some new seedlings to start, please.
Yeah, so your oaks, you can collect the oak seed, the acorns now. One of the things that you'll want to do is you can either plant that acorn directly into the ground. It'll take a little while for it to take off, to germinate. But you can kind of speed it up by cracking the outer shell, just cracking it with like a nutcracker. Don't open it all the way up, but just crack it. Soak it in water, and then you can plant it. And that kind of jump starts the germination because the water, there's already a crack in that shell, so the water can penetrate, and it already has an opening to germinate from.
Hey, sounds great. Thanks much.
All right. We've got one more call to go here. Linda, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. You were talking about the sweet gum trees, and we unfortunately planted one of those in our backyard. But one year, my little granddaughters, who was always looking for a way to earn money, we told them to pick them up a penny a ball.
Oh.
Well, they picked up $2,500. We could not believe it. I owed them $25. Anyway, it was crazy, but I just want to say those rake basket things that you can rent from, you know, hardware store, those things work great because the granddaughters are grown up now. They found other ways to, you know, they've got jobs and that. So anyway, but 2,500 of those things, and that wasn't even all of them. So don't plant a sweet gum tree in your backyard.
There you go.
Bottom line.
Yeah. Good story, Linda. Thanks for calling in with that.
Yeah.
Aaron, great job once again.
Thank you.
Love having you on the show. I'm sure we'll have you back again if you're interested, hopefully.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. That's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Thanks for tuning in.